Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. This is the number one place to come to if you want to learn how to live a longer and healthier life and a happier life. We deal with all these issues. Of course, I also deal with important social issues, more investigative journalistic articles than any other journalist in the United States that I'm aware of, over 400 commentaries, essays, in-depth analysis of the world we live in. And we do the most on environmental issues in any radio program on the planet. But on this particular broadcast, we always deal with health because that's something that cuts across all lines. It doesn't matter how young, old, educated, not wealthy, not. You don't want to be diseased. You don't want to have high blood pressure and cancer. And this is how we can prevent it. We begin with a study from the Chinese Academy of Medical Sciences. That's much like our National Academy of Sciences. And they talk about something that we should all be aware of, and that is that higher vitamin C levels is associated with lower mortality, that means death, risk, during a 16-year period. Now, the study is reported in the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health, a major peer-reviewed journal, and it uncovered an association between higher plasma vitamin C levels and a lower risk of death during more than a 16-year follow-up. The study included almost 1,000 men and women, generally between the ages of 53 and 84, who enrolled in what is called the General Population Nutrition Intervention Trial. And then they followed them for 16 years, from 1999, clear up through 2000 plus. And what they found is this. Here's the takeaway. The more vitamin C you have in your system, the less oxidative stress you have, the less free radicals from the oxidative stress, the less attacking of your cells, damaging of your DNA, and the less cancer also, because one of the ways that we are able to monitor and destroy cancer cells, which we're all creating all the time, 24/7, but they don't manifest into a tumor, they don't manifest into something that can kill you, is because we have what are called natural killer cells. And the natural killer cells patrol our body constantly. The more vitamin C you have, the more vigorous is your approach, meaning it's stronger, more vital. It can do its work in killing cancer cells better. And so that's important. In fact, there was among the top 25%, the adjusted risk of dying from any cause during a follow-up was 25% lower than the risk experienced by subjects whose vitamin C levels were among the lowest quarter. And those whose plasma vitamin Cs were the highest, 25% had adjusted risk of dying from cancer at less than, and stroke, 28% less risk of dying from heart disease and 35% less risk of dying from cancer. That's a big deal. Mind you, we're only talking about one nutrient. We're not talking about quercetin and the isothiocyanates and indole-3-carbinols and all of the cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, kale, mustard greens, radishes. All of those added into the diet reduce your risk even more from dying from cancer or even getting cancer. And then if you add in juicing, you know, having your fresh celery, cucumber, lemon juice in the morning, which is great for you, and staying away from coffee, which is highly anabolic and very acidic, then you're able to prevent dying from heart disease even more. Now throw in a healthy plant-based diet, exercising, and appropriate ways of dealing with stress, and you're decreasing the underlying cause of a lot of disease, which is inflammation and lipid peroxidation, and also you're increasing your nitric oxide level. When you have pomegranates and beets, and beet juice, you are reducing heart disease. Why? Because you're increasing the oxygenation of your blood. You're helping to heal the arteries, the lining of the veins. You are making it more pliable, more flexible. All that's good for you. So it's that simple, but vitamin C, that's the number one nutrient you should be taking every day. I know I when I go out in the sun, when I go to do a workout in the morning, I take extra vitamin C because it thins my blood, prevents stroke. It also protects me from the sun. And then when I'm going on a flight, I take vitamin C, 1,000 milligrams every hour that I'm on a flight, because I know what's happening to my body when I'm flying in a Petri dish, enclosed Petri dish, all those people around me. Now, mind you, I wear everywhere I go when I'm around a lot of public, and I'm going to be close to them, sitting right next to someone who may have a disease. I'm not talking about COVID now, any disease. I'll just wear a plastic mask. It covers my eyes, my nose, and my mouth, the three entry points. I also wear gloves on a plane or when I go shopping. Now, people may say, what's that about? Well, as a scientist, 33 years, every day in the laboratory, 5 additional years, once a week in the laboratory, that's 38 years. That's longer than most people have a major career. And as a scientist, I knew the importance of hygiene. And when you touch a doorknob, when you touch money, there could be over 3,000 different microorganisms, bacteria, on that single dollar bill. Well, how many times in a day are you buying something and you're touching, you're shaking hands? Let's say someone, before they shook your hand, they sneezed or coughed in their hands and did something like this, like rubbing your hands together is magically going to cause whatever was on your hands to disappear. No, it's there. And even things we don't think about, like you're in a house, someone's got a cold, you don't. You're taking care of them. Are you super building your immune system? Are you taking extra vitamin D, extra vitamin C, extra zinc, extra quercetin, echinacea, astragalus, podiarco, extra juices? You should. Are you making sure that they, whoever is sick, is putting their toothbrush upside down in a glass of hydrogen peroxide, which will kill all the bacteria and viruses on it? No, not doing that. Are you spraying down all of the things that people commonly touch in a day? Remote control, doorknobs, with alcohol? No, not doing that. Well, then there's a high likelihood you're going to end up with what's called rebound infection. They're starting to get better. They brush their teeth. Now what was on the bacteria from their body that caused the disease on their toothbrush, they brush their teeth, boom, they're sick again. And now with long COVID, you're going to be really concerned about keeping to a strict protocol. And remember, if you go to the GaryNall.com and look at the article I wrote on masks, no opinion in it. It dealt just with looking at all the actual high-quality studies, the largest study ever done on masks, and you start to realize, wow, we thought if we wore these masks, we'd be protected. Standing 6 feet away from people, we'd be protected. Unfortunately, there's no good science to support it. Now, a shield, there is good science, because remember, a mask, just use common sense. If you put a mask on that was able to block 90% of the particulate matter around you that you're breathing in, okay, good. Danders, molds, bacteria, viruses, you're blocking that. Where's the oxygen supposed to come from? All right? How much oxygen are you able to get in? Normally it's around 21%. What if you're down to 19%? Suddenly you have oxygen deprivation, and that can end up killing and harming brain cells, central nervous cells, lung cells. So something that allows you to breathe also allows viruses in. Viruses are very small. You're talking about minus electron size. And so you're dealing with something that can easily penetrate most masks that people wear. And also, it depends upon how far you are from someone. If you're in a common area, then everyone's breathing out. Everything's in the air. Now, if your immune system is strong, okay, that's great. That's going to protect you, your innate immune system. But what if your immune system isn't that strong? What if you have some comorbidity? You have diabetes. You have high blood pressure. You're on some medications. Then you've got to be very conscious. So a shield, a plastic shield that goes from the top of the forehead to the bottom of the chin and covers out ear to ear, Nothing can penetrate it. Now, yes, oxygen comes underneath the mask and allows you to breathe. But if you're in a room or you're outside, when I go shopping, you know, I'm not standing side by side to people, and the air is not going to go down and then back up again. That's not how it works. Someone sneezes or coughs, it's just like if you were to shoot a squirt gun at someone. If you're shooting it at 20 feet, you're not going to hit them. You know, the water will go and fall to the ground. If you're 2 feet away, they're going to get splashed all over the place. Just remember, use common sense, but also use an ionizer. There are lots of different ionizers, and they exhibit the capacity to block all kinds of bacteria and molds and danders and from getting into the body, because they create a protective shield about 12 inches around the face. And you can get them rechargeable or put new batteries in. I have two every time I go to a concert, because you shouldn't stop socializing. I mean, that's part of the joy of life. You just take some precautions. By the way, I've been this way my entire adult life. All right? Ask any of my friends when we go to dinner. I'll take the napkins on the table and I put it on my seat. They just look at me like, "You're an idiot, Gary." Well, that may be true, but I'm not going to be a sick idiot. What do you mean? Well, do you think that the average person actually washes themselves after they defecate? Soap and water, cleans themselves, get in the shower, whatever, or use a bidet? I have a bidet. You know, you clean yourself. Soap and water. The Japanese, every home has one. Around the world, everybody knows this. In America, you put a bidet and people think it's a drinking fountain. We are not hygienic. Well, I use toilet paper. Fine, then you're clean. Absolutely, I'm clean. Okay, let's just take a sample. Take a smear, put this and rub your cheek and see what's on it. Oh my God, look at all that. All that's on there. And that is fecal matter. And that's what gets on people who eat salads and raw foods in restaurants. Do you think the people in those restaurants are practicing full hygiene? Good luck with that. I've owned three of the top vegan restaurants in American history. I started the first organic vegan restaurant where 90% of the food that was consumed each day came from a farm, Fertiller Farm, upstate New York. We'd grow it. We'd make a seam bread with French brick ovens. We did everything the old-fashioned way. Brought it down in the afternoon, and then the chefs would prepare it. We had a limited menu, two entrees, two soups, two salads, two desserts. But it was only $2.50. I did it as a co-op, so the community could work together. Well, that didn't work. Everybody wanted to eat for free. I work at the co-op. I haven't seen you in here. Well, I'm going to. Yeah, I didn't mind. It was a great time from 1970 to 1980. And all the activists, I mean, literally, it was up near Columbia University, 108th and Broadway. We were packed every night. And people appreciated the fact that we had pictures up on the wall of, here's the seed, here's your salad. We grew it organically. Here's the bread, whole ground, stone ground. You know, this is whole grain and stone ground. We grinded it ourselves. We made it at low heat, so it's a living food. The soups, the sauces, lots of love. And we made it gourmet, too. It was the first gourmet vegan restaurant in American history. And I was excited by that. In any case, hygiene was very important. And I set very strict standards because I didn't want to have someone come in, eat a good meal, and then end up with some form of food poison because someone forgot to wash their hands. So we need hygiene. And you especially need hygiene because remember, whatever's on your body that you didn't wash goes through your underwear, goes through your pants or dress, and goes onto the seat. You could go into any restaurant in America and just take samples, just simple bacterial samples, off the seats. Go into any movie theater, same way. So I just take a portable little cushion, right? Take my own silverware. Simple. Now, is it eccentric? To the average person, yes. To my friends, they make fun of it, and that's fine. But to me, at least I'm keeping as much as I can. The harmful bacteria, out of my body. And then I make sure I have enough vitamin C, because vitamin C is your single most important nutrient to prevent heart disease, cancer, and to keep you healthy and keep yourself strong. Now, I mentioned cauliflower just a few moments ago when I was talking about cruciferous vegetables. Well, according to Rutgers University, cauliflower prevents various cancers. Yes, and that's because it contains what are called glucosinolates and thiocyanates. Both are sulfur-containing phytonutrients that cleanse the body of damaging free radicals. It also contains a substance called sulforaphane, S-U-L-F-O-R-P-H-A-N-E. Now, that's a compound that's known to inhibit the occurrence of some cancers, and it's strongly anti-carcinogenic, primarily colon rectal cancer. And you're talking about one item from the diet can help with cancer prevention. Well, what if you ate two or three servings of cruciferous vegetables per day? I know some of you are, and good for you. And when you juice the cruciferous vegetables, that's really powerful, more powerful than eating it, because you're getting a higher bioavailability. More of it's getting into your cells. And if you have powders, even better still, still most concentrated. But sulforaphane is in broccoli. It's in cauliflower. And you can end up with fewer cancerous polyps, and those polyps can lead to cancer of the colon. Just something to think about, not expensive, easy to get, and you steam them. And also, if you were to increase your protein intake by 25 grams a day, if you're a woman, you can reduce hip fractures by a risk of up to 14%, just that alone. That's the University of Leeds in the United Kingdom. So increasing intake of protein and drinking green tea is one way women could reduce the risk of suffering a hip fracture. That's according to new research. And it's just 25 grams. That'd be one scoop of a plant-based protein. Now, take into account that you could be using vitamin K and vitamin D, calcium and magnesium, manganese. There are combinations out there that will help you increase bone density, and that will help prevent it also. This was published in the Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And I got time to squeeze one more in, and that is that mindfulness meditation trumps a placebo in pain reduction. This is Wake Forest University Medical Center. Scientists at Wake Forest Medical Center have found new evidence that mindfulness meditation reduces pain more effectively than a placebo. This is significant because placebo-controlled trials are the recognized standard for demonstrating the efficacy of clinical and pharmacological treatments. The research published in the Journal of Neuroscience showed that study participants who practiced mindfulness meditation reported greater pain relief than placebo. And significantly, brain scans showed that mindfulness meditation produced a very different pattern of activity than those produced by placebo to reduce pain. Quote, "We were completely surprised by the findings." That's the professor of neurobiology and anatomy at Wake Forest. Yeah, you're surprised, but think of all the people. And I want to give a shout out to one person, Deepak Chopra. Dr. Chopra has spent decades showing the power of meditation and in reducing pain and increasing overall well-being. And just want to say thank you for a lifetime of good work. We share difference of opinion on other issues. In fact, I remember, oh my goodness, it must have been around 1975. My producer, Adria Eismeyer, remember her? 14 years of my producer, phenomenal producer. She was the one that made sure that all those get-togethers in the country up at Grossinger's and Homowack and let's see, where did we go? We went to seven different places over a period of 12 years, doing two a year, one in the winter and one in the summer. And I brought in the best speakers imaginable, Linus Pauling, all the great people in the alternative movement came. And she said, there's this guy named Deepak Chopra who wants to come up. And so I we invited him up, and he was our afternoon speaker, and he did a good job. People enjoyed him. So that's how long ago that introduction was. Long time ago. He's still around, still doing good work. Good for him. So just remember, mindful meditation every day. In fact, whenever I'm faced with some kind of issue, instead of getting angry or getting upset, I simply sit quietly for a moment, and I simply say to myself, calm. Calm. Just calm down. It's just information. And you'll find a way through this. Stay calm. My blood pressure, my heart rate, stay completely normal. As a result, that's one less way of causing yourself to have a micro stroke in the brain, which people can when you get angry, start yelling and screaming. Really is not good for you. So just stay calm. And mindful meditation, in its different forms, helps to do that. And by the way, let's stop pretending that we don't know that our taking too much salt in the diet can cause us to have a heart attack or a stroke. Tulane University just said, stop with all the salt in your food and reduce heart disease risk. So we know the science is there. This was published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, and yet we're still using too much salt. The question is, why? Because you could use lemon juice and lime juice, apple cider vinegar, combination of all that, and even throw in a sweetener, a natural sweetener like raspberry juice. Just juice some raspberries and put the juice, strain it, and put the juice of the raspberries in there, and with the apple cider vinegar, even a touch of Manuka honey, shake it up, and then spray it on your salad, and it's delicious, enhances the flavor of everything. But there's no sodium, no high blood pressure. I'm Gary Nall, and we're doing the video streaming now over Zoom because a lot of people would like to see the person sharing information. But we have to get on with the rest of our program, which will not be video streamed. But go to GaryNall.com because I'm adding new articles, a lot of new articles. I have a major new article I'm doing tomorrow on the World Economic Forum and why you should be very concerned with what they're doing, these unelected people. And also I'm doing one later today on a different understanding of what it means to be awake versus woke. And all this you can find on GaryNall.com or PRN.live. PRN.live. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us today, everyone. We've got a lot of interesting things I'm going to share now, including, as I promised, for all of you who are over the age of 40 and you've worked hard and you've been conscientious. None of us live perfect lives, but you've done the best you can to be ethical and moral and learn. You all have had a good background in history, some of it distorted, as we know. Others have seen history in their own lives, and they know what's real and what's not real. Younger generations come along, and not all of these younger generations appreciate what previous generations have had to go through, as we don't always appreciate what people 100, 200, 300, 500 years ago had to go through. So I've prepared a commentary to share with you. It'll also be posted. If you find of interest, share it with other people. Remember, we don't do any advertising, no public relations, no publicist. I don't do interviews with the media because I don't trust the media anymore. Used to. For 40 years, I had no problems having lots of media, and they were fairly honest and objective. All that's changed. So maybe this is a way for us to understand that no matter how much you're badgered and condemned, ridiculed and mocked and tried to be shamed, don't take it personally. These people do not know who you are. They have not lived your life. They don't have your experience, your perception, your reality. Frequently, they're just immature brats. But you'll see in my commentary. A little later on, we're going to have an activist on to talk about what is happening with a rally later today. And I really hope those of you can go to this rally because it's important. And we're going to hear from Jonathan Peters about if young people want to change the world, good, then he's got some advice. And it's really interesting advice, very positive. But this just came up today. This is from the Surgical Neurological International Journal. Quote, this is the headline, "The pharmaceutical industry is dangerous to health. Further proof with COVID-19. Wow. Listen to this headline. Never thought I'd see this. The pharmaceutical industry is dangerous to health. Further proof with COVID-19. And they have all the authors there. Let me go down past the abstract, background, methods, results, to the conclusion. It's only a paragraph. Quote, by supporting and selecting only the one side of science information while suppressing alternative viewpoints and with obvious conflicts of interest revealed by the study, the governments and the media constantly disinform the public. The media and government constantly disinform the public. Consequently, the unscientifically validated vaccine laws originating from industry-controlled medical science led the adoption of social measures for the supposed protection of the public, but which became serious threats to the health and freedoms of the population. Wow. Just want to let you know that it's now happening. The Orthodox community is finally having the courage to fight back, since everything you've been told has been disinformation. Now, I'm going to first do a commentary, and then I'm going to play a clip. And if you'd like to call in after the commentary and share your points of view, please do so. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. Oh, and just a little quick thing. We found what was causing the buzz in, on my end, and that's been corrected. And because I'm working with what is called a Comrex unit, and sometimes if it's this, if the frequency is not perfectly set, you'll get that. But now that's been corrected. Also, a couple of people yesterday on the podcast at 16 minutes in the program found that there was a commercial about liver something. Well, we didn't know anything about that. And that's the only time that's happened that we're aware of. So Rodney and our team in the office tracked it down, and that won't happen again. We're not allowing anyone to put any ads on any of our stuff. So that was stopped. And they're all over the place out there, but we pay for special services so that doesn't happen to us. Sometimes systems don't pay attention, that gets through. Now to America's cultural and social collapse. Now, mind you, societies never collapse all at once. Sometimes it takes decades, even centuries. The Roman Empire took a long time. The Ottoman Empire, Byzantine Empire, they all took time. But then again, they weren't faced with what we're faced with today, where everything is accelerated. And as a result, shouldn't we stop long enough and take a broad glance across the radical changes that have been taking place since the turn of the millennium to realize that the rapid degeneration of American culture and society, to acknowledge that the U.S. is now at its lowest point since the founding of the nation, is an understatement. And yet we cringe at the need for having serious conversation with this understatement always present. Who has the courage to reach out to people with opposing views and say, friend, can we have a civil conversation on our differences and our similarities? No. And that is what has happened. As a civilization, and this applies to many other developed nations, that the United States considers these people to be our allies, good, and yet we refuse to reflect back upon what should have been done to have mitigated our path towards self-destruction and what we have enabled to be done and worse, directly participated in. An example, this week the New York Times, along with several other mainstream media publications, have finally come forward to challenge the U.S. government's indictment of Julian Assange on accusations of treason. However, these have been the very same media outlets who relied upon WikiLeaks materials and investigations, while at the same time giving vocal support to the government's criminal charges. Assange's revelations were not only accurate, but from the perspective of a higher moral ground, Assange's activities were heroic. But for the powerful who engage in reprehensible criminal actions, Assange must be punished. Some, even elected officials, have gone as far as to advocate for his execution. The media's complicity in promulgating the government's condemnation of Assange and every other whistleblower who reveals government cover-ups and crimes displays a collective cowardice. How many other revelations might there be if the media didn't fear people like Assange, who bring forth new information about government and corporate improprieties and corruption? We would be inundated with knowledge we did not previously have. Looking back at the gradual decline of American education, how do we reach a stage where teaching math or English can be racist when it is not? However, today the cult of cultural woke claims it is. Teachers are unwillingly forced to acquiesce to their union's demands to embrace critical race theory, a complete distortion of fundamental psychological principles that is determined to discover racist tendencies present in every aspect of every human interaction. Critical race theory's egregious threat to any potential goal to reach a unifying civilization is its assault on the very idea of a free society. You see, in the woke culture, you cannot be free if you do not align with them. You're a perpetrator. You're a predator. You're the victimizer. You're the degenerate. And there is no punishment that they not believe is adequate for you. The woke ideology mission is to dismantle a free society where there is only a collective, a groupthink, and no longer distinct individuals capable of exerting free will. In fact, similar to what I consider personally the rantings of the new atheists such as Sam Harris and Daniel Dennett, the advocates of wokeness deny free will even exists. Pretending to be the postmodern champions of civil rights, its followers instead erase whatever has been gained by history's protectors of human rights. Every imaginable absurdity of human creativity is simply thrown into the heap of irrational nonsense, hyperactive emotional afflictions, to be codified into laws. And those who resist should be banned, censored, and punished without exception. Without dialogue, without debate, without trial. You're guilty and must be punished. Not until proven innocent. Your innocence is not even a question worth asking. You are guilty because someone deems you guilty. You've made a statement. You've uttered a word. You've made an eye gesture. Anything that someone feels has tripped them into some form of psychological, mythical, completely illusionary psychological state. Ah, so that's what we're dealing with. It is. The consequences of this complete national dumbing down of the Western mind to a level of adolescent tantrums is being witnessed in all of its perverted, decadent glory during the COVID-19 pandemic, and more recently following Russia's special military operations to denazify and demilitarize the Ukrainian Russophobic regime. The inanity of America's political elite and their European allies following the Obama-Clinton 2014 coup in Kiev has now created a hot war with Russia by proxy, a war NATO is incapable of winning. But a lot of people will profit from it, and therefore there will be no peace, no matter what the destruction is, because the war machine, the neocons, which are the majority of people living in and participating in the government and its private contracting, especially the military, industrial, and security apparatus, gain enormous profits. So there will be no win. There will only be losses. And the media will support them. Again, we observe the outright ludicrousness of our media spinning absurd propaganda, lies, and misinformation that defies any reality based upon facts. Virtually everything we have been told about the efficacy of face masks, lockdowns, social distancing, and RNA vaccines, and the RNA vaccines need versus some other non-toxic therapy, as well as Zelensky's imaginary victories against an overwhelming superior military in Russia, have been sheer fantasy. The official narratives regarding both the pandemic and the new Cold War against Russia indicate that a kind of woke-based mentality has penetrated our entire executive legislative branches of governance. This grotesque twisting of the intellectual needs to rewrite history in order to mask its underlying stupidity, this trend to revise history to accommodate their inhumane military escapades for regime change was on full display during John Stewart's recent interview with Hillary Clinton and Condoleezza Rice. The two former hardened neocon pro-war advocates who were secretaries of the State Department twisted, gnarled, and fabricated documented facts to excuse their military campaigns to violently bring about regime change to sovereign nations, despite whatever criticism one may have against those countries. I'll give you one example of how the media has refused to cover a story that the United States government, as official proxy, has had stealing every single day, 24 hours a day, of one of the richest sources of the light crude oil in the world, in Syria. Syria is a sovereign nation. It has not been conquered. Its people overwhelmingly support Assad. He was not responsible for any of the poison gas, from Seymour Hersh to Max Blumenthal and to at least a dozen other investigations, all found that it was the U.S.-backed terrorist who were responsible for this. Yes. And what would happen if 60 Minutes had actually shown, here's what happened in Benghazi. We were supplying Gaddafi's weapons to terrorist groups, al-Nusra, so they could use it against Assad. How would that have looked? That's against multiple international laws. How could then we have a war on terror if we're one of the primary supporters of the funding, the intelligence information, and the weaponry and safe haven for the terrorist? It would have confused people. They would have said, well, I thought we had a war on terror against these people. How are we supporting them? But we did. And then after one part of Syria no longer could be protected by the Syrian army, we brought in thousands of trucks. There are photographs, there are videos of these trucks lining up, taking out the oil that belongs to Syria, and then taking it out of the country to Iraq and doing whatever we do with it. That's theft at a phenomenal scale. Not a word. Not a single investigative report. Why? So here's Hillary Clinton, and here's Condoleezza Rice, and they're trying to tell, without any objection from Mr. Stewart, who should have done his homework and didn't, and they're trying to convince people that they're on the right side of history. And the American public, regardless of the lies voiced by the media, that can simply put on their thinking caps and do a little bit of extracurricular reading after turning off CNN, MSNBC, and the New York Times, Washington Post, and other compromised news networks rooting for the American imperialist project? Oddly, for reasons that are difficult to fathom, in their entirety, the political, industrial, and corporate machinery speak in a single voice and refuse to challenge official chronicles built upon delusional aspirations of total control. 3 years into the COVID era, it has only been the cadres of courageous physicians, nurses, and scientists who have broken away from the hypnosis of the National Institutes of Health's big pharma matrix to speak truth at enormous cost to their reputations and careers. They, too, are being canceled and threatened with the loss of their medical licenses for observing the inconsistencies and contradictions between evidence-based scientific data and the cherry-picked science sanctified by the federal health agencies and the Bill Gates-funded global medical institutions such as the World Health Organization. During the course of the pandemic, we are observing our cities being increasingly ghettoized. COVID lockdown policies have resulted in the closure of thousands of small businesses and the complete restructuring of the employee-employee relationship. During the phase of dramatic unemployment, Western cities and districts have essentially legalized random looting of stores. In effect, California's Proposition 47 forbids employees or owners of a business from interfering with looters. You can't touch them. You can't stop them from coming into your store and stealing whatever they want, or else you will be branded a racist and arrested. In Los Angeles, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, gangs send in street thugs and homeless people to load up on merchandise under the helpless watch of security guards. Even large national chain stores have been closing in many cities. How can any society be considered sane when authorities support thieves over the rights of store owners who are victimized? In New York, practically crime has been unofficially ruled as legal, with a revolving door policy between the street and the court, with an unlikely chance of being sentenced to prison, irrespective of your crime. Consequently, criminals continue to rob citizens, hijack cars, sexually harass, assault, kill people, and unfortunately, more often than not, they're released with little to no bail, all the while to repeat the cycle. And all the while, the victims of these crimes are ignored and forgotten. But the perpetrator of the crime is protected by the moral shortcomings of an outraged mob that has the group think at its worst. Think of the mob in 1792 in the streets of Paris. The majority of Americans, both on the left and the right, suffer from chronic confirmation bias and a rigid self-righteousness about the superiority of American values and ideals. This cultural blindness is essentially pernicious in the halls of government and corporate boardrooms. The consequence has been that Americans exhibit a remarkable ability to evade criticisms against the degenerate trends in the United States that are being witnessed by leaders in foreign nations. For example, regardless of your opinions about China's ruling Communist Party, and I am against it, and all their admonitions, what they've done to, for example, the Tibetan culture and people, the prisons, the detention, the reprogramming groups, and the citizens being hyper-monitored, none of that is supportable, in my opinion, from many different points of view. But they have done one thing that maybe we should pay attention to. Regardless of that, what they've done wrong, which is a lot, and inhumane, which is prolific, the Chinese government is widely recognized for having achieved a miracle by lifting nearly 800 million of its citizens out of poverty during the past four decades. That's according to the World Bank. Therefore, when the Chinese government observes the growing poverty in cities across America and rising crime, it is viewed as an admonition of human decency. For a nation that prides itself in winning the economic race against China, it's a disgrace we seem unable to lift 38 million citizens out of poverty here in our own country, including more than 2.5 million children who are homeless and 16 million children who are food insecure. They just go to bed hungry. How's that possible? But it is, because who cares? And that's unfortunate. Average Americans carry exorbitant debt with no relief in sight or security in their future. In fact, the government actually accepts money from lobbyists who are predatory capitalists. They want you to go into debt. They want you to have the inability to pay for your credit card payments. They want to be able to compound your interest. And if you're so poor you have to get a couch from a payday loan company, you could be paying $500 to $1,000 a percent interest on that loan. And yet that's legal in the United States. In addition, regardless of your opinions of Vladimir Putin, based on everything cited just now, the Russian president's perceptions about the current state of American European culture should warrant our attention to better understand why his nation no longer wants to have anything to do with the West. Now, condemning as you will, and you could be right, but during a speech delivered to the Valdai International Discussion Club, which Michael Hudson, a lot of people go to, here's what he said. Again, set aside what he has done, which I am opposed to and have stated that, in Ukraine. I understand why he did it. I do not support what he did. Quote, we see many of the Euro-Atlantic countries are actually rejecting their roots, including Christian values that constitute the basis of Western civilization. They are denying moral principles and all traditional identities, national, cultural, religious, and even sexual. Holidays are abolished or even called something different. Their essence is hidden away, as is their moral foundation, and people are aggressively trying to export their model all over the world. I'm convinced that this opens a direct path of degeneration and primitivism, resulting in a profound demographic and moral crisis. A unipolar, standardized world does not require sovereign states. It requires vassals. In a historical sense, this amounts to a rejection of one's own identity, of the God-given diversity of the world, end quote. And again, he could be a total hypocrite. Focus upon the words. Putin's words are representative of the views of many nations that preserve the values of a cohesive traditional society, which the United States has turned its back on long ago. However, even within the United States, many people are worried about the country's rapid moral decay. The failure of America's education is another shameful plague ravishing youthful minds. Woke liberalism encourages children to act and make decisions without parental knowledge or consent. In place of the nuclear family, the state is becoming the new surrogate parent. You're not allowed to say mother, father, brother, sister, grandmother, grandfather. All know those are alien in this new world order. In order to protect students' fragile emotions, colleges and universities need to become stress-free sanctuaries of comfort and entertainment and pleasure. With easy access to anti-anxiety and depression medications and legions of behavioralists and counselors to ensure students' mental afflictions are normal and precious. In the past, unless teachers and professors engaged in a morally egregious act, students collectively demanding their expulsion was unheard of. Today, woke students are organizing to remove any professor who even mistakenly offends them in some way. And as a result, that person is gone. All the points noted in today's commentary have now been institutionalized into a faux liberal democratic party and being imported into corporate human resource departments. A weird political wokeness is now becoming the Democrats' fundamental propaganda arm. As long as the public identifies with this corporate democratic ideology, they are protected. Do as we say, think as we tell you, act and stay obedient, and there'll be no harm. On the flip side, Republicans nurture their own delusions, which would lead to a social landscape similar to Russia, We are stuck with a pathetic choice between two destructive political calamities. In the meantime, wherever we look, America is descending into a third world status with a much larger bank account. U.S. health care is the most expensive in the world, $4 trillion annually, but the nation ranks at the bottom of the 39 other developed countries. How is that even possible? How is it possible that medical errors, year after year, are between the first and third leading cause of death, and not a single thing's being done to change that? Sadly, in conclusion, there seems to be no effort by American leadership to remedy the causes behind our social and cultural collapse. There's no reverse gear in American politics, nor is there any remorse for the poor decisions that are ushering our domestic downfall. And the public repeatedly fails to organize independently of their political allegiances to hold anyone accountable. Where are the demonstrations against our military ventures destroying numerous innocent lives overseas, or protests against domestic policies contributing to homelessness, poverty, injustice, etc.? Like the Romans, our political architecture gives the public bread and circus, a 24/7 100-course meal of rapacious, hedonic imagery and lies broadcast to a highly propagandized media. Daily we witness the images and sound bites of a nation engrossed in a debauchery that Dante could have imagined, and yet we either applaud or remain silent. Can anyone think of a single groundbreaking accomplishment by either political party that has made the U.S. or the world a more equal, safer, and better place to live during the past three decades? We can't. And what has happened to the voices of the traditional liberal class? Come forward. Do not allow the corporate Democrats, the Clintons, the Obamas, to speak on your behalf, to act on your behalf. That's my commentary. Now we're going to go directly over to a guest standing by, because she is here to explain how we should be demonstrating. Her name is Kat McGuire. Nice to have you with us today, Kat.
Hey, Gary. Thank you so much for having me on.
Kat, tell us about what's going on today and why people in this audience should be concerned, and wherever possible, come in and support it.
Okay. There is an annual summit that New York Times puts on. It's called the Deal Book Summit. And this year, it is going on today at Columbus Circle in New York City, and it's from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. A unbelievable assemblage of banksters and other type of leaders are there gathering for their creditors' love fest. And we are putting on a rally. There's other groups there. Our rally is today from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. with speakers. And we have a beautiful new huge banner that says "No Great Reset." Because all of these people that are coming together have agendas that are wrecking our economy and taking us down a very dark path. So if I may, I'd like to say some of the people who are going to be speaking at this Deal Book Summit that the New York Times has put on.
Please do, Kat.
Okay. Headlining is Larry Fink, who's the CEO of BlackRock. They've got that new fraudster. His name is Sam Bankman-Fried. I would prefer to call him Scam Bankster Fraud, who has just destroyed the crypto market with his $51 billion crash when his company FTX just imploded, based on his embezzlement. We've got Vladimir Zelensky, an incredible warmonger who has turned his country into a criminal slush fund and money washing operation. In my opinion, he's making Ukraine do a grand suicide by cop. because there's no way he can go up against, as our proxy, the military superiority that Russia has at this time. Let me move on. We've got Mark Zuckerberg. He is the poster child for big tech overreach, everything from privacy violations to creepy facial recognition software to Facebook jail, if anyone's ever been in Facebook jail, censorship, fake news dissemination. And the latest criticism against him was for hiring ex-CIA and FBI agents to censor content that deviates from at all the official narrative. Who else is there? Well, we've got
Eric Adams.
Eric Adams, New York City mayor, is there. He's one of their premier puppets. So, of course, he's showing his face. We've got CEOs from Netflix, Amazon, and TikTok. Janet Yellen, the Secretary of the Treasury. Bibi Netanyahu will be speaking. And then it sounds like a strange card in there, Ben Affleck. Well, yes, Ben Affleck is definitely there as a representative of the celebrity industrial complex that is gaslighting us probably more successfully than any of these politicians or business people. So it's this huge gathering of people, and the public is there, but it's not really we the people. It cost $2,500 to come to this event if you're accepted. There's an application process. So you can imagine the circle jerk nature of this gathering, where they have like an elegant cocktail hour and intimate lunchtime discussions and one-on-one with all these great leaders. But we don't have the opportunity to be there. So we're outside protesting, and we will be there from 3 to 6, trying to educate also the public about what the real issues are, and not what they're in Orwellian ways trying to tell us. We don't have inflation. Ukraine is winning the war. We're your best leaders. Woke is the way to go. So we're opposed to all of those, and that's what we're standing up for.
I appreciate that, and thank you for the invitation for me to come and be a keynote speaker, because I would be there, because I support what you're doing. And just let the people know, I'm writing the definitive investigative journalist article against these same people and against the World Economic Forum. I hope to have that ready to broadcast on and to print on Friday, so they'll have more ammunition, quality reporting that they can rely upon to see just what these people have in mind. For example, BlackRock's Larry Fink sits on the board of the World Economic Forum. And on that board, in my opinion, the person that's been groomed to take over the World Economic Forum from Klaus Schwab is a professor, Harari, and he's the one who's already been stating publicly and unapologetically that the average working person is, quote, useless and worthless, and that, quote, there's no God, and, you know, whether you believe or not, that's your business. But he's proclaiming that the World Economic Forum and all of their adjuvants, they're going to take a look at you of what they can do to put you into a soma state, and they've already talked about it. Putting a chip under your skin. He says now we have to put the chip under the skin. He's saying this. This is not conspiracy. This is fact. And if you don't know what they're trying to do and how they've manipulated the COVID to get the vaccine passports, and from there to get the health passports, and then to chip people, and then to digitize the currency. They have all these different ways they're trying to take control. None of them have been elected. So that's why we're going, I believe, this Sharon Woolams, who's a friend, who's a great citizen journalist there in New York, and Valentina, who was a citizen journalist of the year that we gave her a nice award and $1,000 for the award. We do this every year for a whole group of journalists, including citizen journalists. People don't have a professional background, but do good reporting and show video. So please, Kat, take videos. We will post the videos. Have your speakers who are going to be there today make statements so we can post those. And we have a huge worldwide audience, the largest progressive audience in the world. And we want them to get this message out. And the only, if no other reason that you should go there today, friends, is because for decades they denied that UFOs were real and aliens were non-existent. Take a good look at Mark Zuckerberg. mm-hmm. days. Man, what a weird one. Anyhow, Kat, we look forward to the people being there today and protesting. And though they won't hear you inside, let the world know that you're maybe outside, but you've got the truth on your side. All right.
Well, we especially, we especially want to go after BlackRock because they have been absolutely egregious. They almost single-handedly with their $10 trillion in financial assets have controlling interest in almost every nation and corporation in the world. And now they are building a new AI center in Silicon Valley to augment Aladdin, which will give them above and beyond tech dominance. They are no longer just a financial technical organization. They have more political power than any entity in the entire world. So we need to go after BlackRock.
I agree. We're doing a whole special next week on this program at noon on BlackRock and its founder in depth, going clear back on Larry Fink. And
excellent.
It'll be honest and good reporting. But again, the more you know, the better informed you are of the truth, the less power these people will have over you. All the best to you today, and give everybody my best regards, all right?
Thank you so much, Gary.
Okay. And that is Kat McGuire, and she will be one of the people leading this demonstration. And please, if you can get out and join them at Columbus Circle. That's all the time we have, everyone. I want to thank you all for taking your time and listening. And by the way, if you didn't listen live last night to two outstanding voices in the recovery movement, these are two women who were abused by the psychiatric community, and today they have survived it. They've gotten out of that. They cannot be diagnosed today as being with any psychiatric disorder. They never had a psychiatric disorder, but they are really sensitive people, articulate. Download last night's Progressive Comedy Hour. It's worthwhile. And by the way, next week, I've got Tess coming on, who is an MD, PhD, one of the finest voices in the world in science and medicine, to deconstruct the myths of COVID and from Great Britain. That'll be Tuesday night. Have a nice day, everyone.